student. I must preface this next case. I understand the council remanded it back to us last meeting. However, there's nothing further to investigate. Therefore, I'm bringing it back to the council as per statute. We're not required to await a criminal adjudication. So, therefore, I'm presenting this case again before the body. Officer involved is Aristio H. Tristan, formerly with Twilla County SO. The charge is DUI under Category D. The recommended sanction is 18-month suspension. This is signed under waiver. Resigned from the department 1-6 of 13. On December 16, 2012, Tristan, a corrections officer with the Twilla County Sheriff's Office, was stopped for improper lane travel. The investigating officer detected the odor of alcohol and believed Tristan was possibly under the influence. After Tristan failed the standardized field sobriety test, it was determined that he was under the influence and therefore unsafe to operate a vehicle. Tristan was placed under arrest and submitted to a chemical breath test, which indicated his breath alcohol content was 0.17, over double the legal limit. I believe there is a letter from Sheriff Park in your file.
Okay. Any questions for Director Stevenson? Is Mr. Tristan or legal representative here today?
My name is Aristo Tristan, and I'm just here to once again offer my apologies for what I did. I know that what I did was wrong, and I've done all that I can so far right now to this day to make sure everything's taken care of and everything's fixed. I've still not gone to the criminal court. It was supposed to have been last month, but they moved it for this month on the 23rd, 24th. And that's where I'm at. I want to go back to work. I really miss it. I love my coworkers. I love my job. And I don't want to lose it, so I'm just going to read this real quick. It was a letter from one of my ex-coworkers, Sergeant, and it's just saying that he's writing this letter of recommendation in behalf of me, that he's known me for 10 years, and I've watched him progress from graduating from the Correctional Academy, completing his field training officer period, completing probation, tested number one on the sergeant's roster, which advanced to sergeant level and commanded a crew of competent officers waiting to be led by a fine leader that Aristo has become. I was privileged to have chosen Aristo as my officer in charge in my absence, and as I have often said, no one works harder than Tristan. I'm aware of the recent issues that have already been brought great embarrassment and shame to Aristo's career and career goals. I know immediately of the devastation that this has caused him in his personal life. I know that Aristo is terribly sorry for his actions and the subsequent results. I know that he has suffered perhaps greatest because he has let down, because of the letdown this has caused for those that are willing and happily to follow Sergeant Tristan. I know that the hurt and the disappointment of this has brought to his family and to the close loved ones. I know that this lesson will never have to be repeated for him, as he truly learned that our actions have very tangible consequences to those we love and those we work with. If I may, I would like to appeal for as much leniency as Post considers fair and prudent. Aristo is not asking for favors, nor is he asking to be absolved of responsibility. As a close friend and co-worker, and one who knows him, I've never appealed to Post on behalf of anyone in the past. I simply ask for Post to seriously consider Aristo's complete cooperation and submission to all that has been asked of him, as is his ethic and demeanor. Aristo will complete whatsoever is laid before him. I would appeal for the proper balance of a responsibility to be affixed to this remainder of Aristo's action. He has suffered greatly in every which way. I know for myself, as do most of us that work with Sergeant Tristan, that he has already suffered more than can now be administered. I sincerely thank you for your time. And it's Sergeant McFetridge, Tooele County Sheriff's Office.
Anything else you'd like to say, Mr.
No, you're no, sir.
All right. Any questions of Mr. Tristan?
Yes, a comment. The last post-council, it's even in the minutes here that Mr. Wallentine made a comment that we table this until the criminal proceedings was resolved. I'd like to ask you a question. Did you request it to be continued out, or why is it continued out another month?
No, sir. The judge apparently wasn't able to be there for that court date. I was going to go plead guilty. I have done everything. Just pay the fine. But the attorney said don't because of a discrepancy that he thinks it can be dropped. So, I don't know, sir. I don't know. It was a motion. He moved it to a motion. He was going to interview the officer, but I called. He says, call me on the 7th, on the 18th, and I'll give you your, it's dropped, or when your next court date is. I called him, and they said that the court, my attorney made a motion. And I called, and he says, no, it's been moved. I asked why, because the judge wasn't able to be there for that day or something like that. So now it's the 23rd or 24th of this month.
Like to point out that according to the statute, we don't have to wait until cases are adjudicated as a council. So, anything else, Mr. Tristan?
No, sir.
Any other questions for Mr. Tristan? Thank you, sir. Director Stevenson?
Just as a matter of reminder, the last meeting we had a very similar case, if not almost exact, and in fact, the last case, I believe, was Anderson, had a lesser BAC, and the council went with the year. Just throwing that out there.
Questions for Director John? Okay.
Hold on.
Yes.
Is there a specific reason for that at the baseline?
Double level amendment.
Sure. I have a concern. We made him wait because of his hearing until this time. If we go with the motion now, it would enhance his inability to work even longer than the 18 months because of our moving it from one council meeting to another one.
If I could add to that, we go off of the date of separation. He resigned back in January 6th of 2013, so the decision the council makes will put that date as the effective date. So he would have the sanction start essentially from the date of separation, January 3rd or January 6th of 2013.
Dr. Trickett?
I'd just like to point out that in the previous case where we were discussing, I believe it was Anderson, that there was a mitigating circumstance that he had sought professional counseling from a mental health therapist and had actually received a letter from that person indicating that he had successfully completed that process.
I have a comment. I went and I had an alcohol evaluation done by the Tooele County providing mental health.
Why don't you step up to the podium, Mr. Tristan, so we can get this.
I went, the city prosecutor told me that I would have to attend Mothers Against Drunk Driving, do the PREA course, do 72 hours of community service, have an alcohol assessment test, and I did all that within a month of when I went for my first hearing to plead guilty or not guilty. So I even went to the Tooele County Valley Mental, and I had a drug alcohol assessment test, and I guess they need to tag you with something. And there is a health professional there that works at the Tooele County Jail, which works with Valley Mental Health, and they asked for his professional opinion since he's known me for like 6 years from working there. And they concluded that just to give me something, they said anxiety from everyday stress. So they did not, they said that they did not make it mandatory, but if I could go meet with them once a month to help me with anxiety, that would be good. And I've gone once or I've gone twice to those, but it, I mean, it's like when I go to a restaurant, what, I mean, I feel pressured to order real quick, so then the therapist is like, so what are you going to do now? I'm like, well, I'm going to tell them, give me 5 more minutes. That's how you're going to deal with that anxiety. And, I mean, I've done it. I tell the waiter to wait now. But I wasn't found that I'm dependent on alcohol or anything like that. And like I mentioned in the last one, well, I won't mention anything, but yeah, that gone to that. And once again, it's all been on my own. It's not been court ordered or anything like that. I did 84 hours of community service instead of the 72 that they were asking. I did the prime class within a week. I did the Mothers Against Drunk Driving like 3 weeks after that because it's only given once a month. And as far as I know right now, I have to do is just pay the fine and whatever the judge orders from that. But I've done everything.
Do you have any paperwork from Tooele Valley Mental Health? Or?
You know, I brought it last time, but it's sealed. And I don't know if you remember, Lieutenant, that I offered to give it to you. You said it was not.
He offered to give me the information, but it, since it was sealed and it was personal information, I did not take it at that time. But I do have the information here that he has taken the counseling. He has been gone to the Prime to Life. He has gone to Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. He has attended everything that is required of him. The only thing that he's not accomplished at this time is gone before the criminal process, and they postponed the court. They postponed the court as opposed to Mr. Tristan asking to postpone. So, again, if I may say, the council has already addressed Mr. Anderson from last council meeting, and they've already made a decision based on his actions. The only thing different is that he actually went through the criminal process.
Thank you, Lieutenant DaCosta. Dr. Jenkins.
I would just like to point out that there is an additional difference, which is that a letter from a mental health therapist was actually submitted. The information that you're discussing does not appear to me to be a letter from a mental health therapist.
It's in my apartment downtown. I can go get it real quick and bring it this afternoon, the whole packet.
It's hard for me to take into account any of that information. As I said previously, the letter that was submitted for Officer Anderson was fairly specific and from a credentialed professional, and I don't have any of that information in front of me here.
I don't know if the business card of the professional that did the testing would help.
Well, no. It would help me know who that person is, but it wouldn't help me understand what their opinion is.
I will bring that packet. I have it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tristan. Okay, I'm going to bring it back to council. Obviously, we're missing one piece of information that may be beneficial, but it's up to what the council wants to do, if we want to table this one more time and hear it in September or move forward with it now. So, John?
I make a motion to accept post council. I'm hearing a lot of this is continued, this is continued, this isn't here. Make a motion, no sense dragging this on. Double the legal limit of alcohol. I make a motion to accept post counsel's recommendation.
Okay, we have a motion.
I second that.
Second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Matter carries.
Just a matter of record, since January, we have had 9 relinquishments, 4 since the last council meeting.
Director, would it be possible in the future just to get a list of the relinquishments so the council knows why individuals are relinquishing their certification? I don't know if we need the particular circumstances of the case, since that's a decision they make on their own. But
per statute, it does not need to come before the council.
Okay.
And part of that relinquishment is that they avoid this whole process.
All right.
But once they relinquish, they can never be an officer again. So the point of them coming to us under scrutiny, I think, is immaterial.
And I guess I have a question on that. If somebody just says, I've decided I don't want to be a police officer anymore, so I'm going to relinquish my certification, there's no wrongdoing on that, no allegation. They just make that decision, and 5 years down the road, they go, you know, that was probably a rash decision. Is there any process for them to come back, or is that, it's my understanding, there is not.
There is not.
No, and that's in code.
And we are very clear with them before they sign that form. I think we've only had one come to us saying, I don't want to deal with it.
Right. And I know you are, but we're also very clear, don't lie in your application, too. So we seem to, anyway, just curiosity. All right, thank you, Director.
And we've had, since we've instituted the relinquishments, we've had 46 since 2010.
Yes, sir.
We could provide a statistical report that shows the number without individual names, the number of relinquishments, and the reason or the allegation that's attached to those relinquishments. And then also to your second question, the statute actually says that the relinquishment can only be accepted when an accusation has been made to post. So there isn't really in statute a mechanism for an officer who has not had an allegation to just come in and relinquish.
All right. I'm
So,
thank you.
So you said you could bring the statistics plus the allegations?
Yeah, we could tell you how many relinquishments and the reasons for those relinquishments without just introducing names.
I think that would be beneficial.
I do too.
Mr. Chair
Tracy?
Exactly for that reason, just to look at what conditions that post may or that we might want to address in training to help. Absolutely. If these are starting to show one trend versus another in a specific area, that we could look at it just for that matter. What could we do to offset that with some possible training?
We will add that from here on out.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. All right, that concludes the disciplinary section of the meeting, so we'll now turn the time over to our technology update manager, Mr. Manager John Jacobs.
Good almost afternoon. We're still in morning, Council. Just to give you an update of the progress POST is making in the technology area, there's a couple big items coming up for us. Of course, once again, it's our annual training audit and reporting this year. This will be a continuation of the years of the reporting we've been doing online. The system has been operational all year. Some agencies have opted to report training as the year goes on. And so that is lessening the burden on a lot of agencies to try and compile those reports and get them to us in a timely manner. So that is going to continue. And this year, we actually have funded an enhancement to the program where we'll be able to more accurately run reports within our staff to be able to know who is deficient in their training hours. The second item is that we now have a document management component attached to our ACADIS or our records management system. So this kind of pursues an initiative we had for over 5 years on getting all of our documents secured, including all of our scan documents and anything that comes into post. And so that will be instituted. And with that, the third one is actually our largest accomplishment that has been a considerable investment from post with funds and resources, is to take our application truly online. This process was, we're rolling out this month, is the ability for the person filling out an application to complete the application entirely online and submit it. They'll still be able to print the application and hand it to the agencies as they do now, but the data from that application will actually be transmitted to post that we'll be able to keep. This provides greater security of the document. Right now, the documents are being passed from the officer to the agency, then back to us. There's a lot of hand traveling, and as you know, these applications carry a considerable amount of personal information in the officer's life. The printed copy of the application that gets handed to the agency is going to have redacted information as far as Social Security numbers and other personal information to further protect where that paper document goes. And another benefit of this program is it's going to hopefully clear up some application issues and errors we've been seeing with it. We're switching to what's called an e-signature system. That's where they'll actually type in their name as their e-signature. This will be followed up when they come to the academy. Post actually has the class that they've been doing where they sign another document saying that everything's true and correct in the application. So we'll actually capture that wet signature, as we call it, an actual physical signature in the academy. So this will forego the need for the application to be hand-signed. It can actually be digitally signed. And we've added verbiage in here that says, I'm personally completing this application and not someone on my behalf. So we're kind of going through some things we're seeing and helping that out. Another benefit of this program is the people filling out the applications always have to say C attached or C attached. There's not enough room to accomplish the information on there. So this application is actually interactive. So if they say, the reason why I'm completing it for basic training, then it starts asking them questions based on, okay, what are you doing for basic training? If they're asking for a waiver, it starts asking them more questions. Hopefully you can see some of this here. Are you certified or certifiable? Yes. Then it starts asking, okay, what state are you in? It starts asking more information. So a person's application could be 5 pages long or could be 25 pages long, depending on the information they provide. Another benefit of this is it has validation. So if you come down here and say, no, I did not graduate from high school, then it obviously asks more questions that now become required. If you say you have ever attended any other training, it allows you to fill out that training, and then you can add another instance of that. So you can keep on building and building and building. Currently, right now, they have to say, see attached form where I personally filled out all this information. When we come down into drug use, I'll scroll here, sorry if you're trying to read this. When they come up with it, if they say yes, then it comes up, says how many times, late date of last use. And those are forced questions. Right now in the application, if you say, yes, I did drugs, there's nothing else stopping you from just not completing the application. So the benefit of this is it's going to hopefully provide a more accurate application. And also because we'll be able to receive this data and it'll be stored in their profile, if a person fills out an application, maybe gets rejected from an agency or an academy based on what they say in the application, they fill out a new one, send it to another one. Our investigators now will actually be able to see all applications submitted when they evaluate, and in case there's some things going on or discrepancies between applications. We found that not all applications come to post. A lot of them stay with the agencies or stay with the satellites if they never complete training or never get hired. So that is all I have to show you today. Is there any questions? We're making it optional this month because we're testing out this, them being able to log in and create an account. So when people go to the post application, they'll be given the option to complete the new application or the old. Then once we feel confident the system's working, we'll turn off the old application.
On multiple applications, will the system automatically flag discrepancies, or is that still going to have to be?
It will not. There is technology out there to do that, but what it will do is the applications will be stored in the document management of that person's profile. Then when the investigator is asked to review the application, they have the ability to see all other applications filled out, and they can, but in an A-B comparison, no, it does not do that right now. Okay. So.
Any other questions, Mr. Jacobs? Thank you. I think that will help streamline this process for me. All right, we'll have a policy update by Deputy Director Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Council members. In your packet, you should have a memo right after the disciplinary issues and then some attached documents. On an annual basis, we review the post policy and procedure manual, and then as need arises during the year for revisions of that policy, we send those out as addendums and then incorporate those at the end of the year. So what I'd like to do today is just give you a very brief synopsis of the changes that have taken place in the post policy and procedure manual since our last annual report last June. And you should have those documented on your memorandum, and then the actual copies of the policies and the changes are highlighted for your review. In policy 2030, most of this was for clarification's sake. We clarified the conditions under which an individual who's been dishonorably discharged from the military is not eligible for peace officer training. We also clarified waiting periods for various violations, again, to make sure that they are consistent with the disciplinary guidelines adopted by the council. Policy 2090 through 2095 deals with assessments, testing processes here at the Academy. We've had a change in processing our tests. We went changed vendors. Testing used to be done under the question mark system, and it is now part of our ACADA system, which has given us some enhanced capabilities. So we've done a couple of things with the testing. One is we've established intermediate tests in place of quizzes, which were in place before, and we've listed in our curriculum the topics that those tests will cover so that we have a consistency across all of the academies as to how the information in the curriculum is being presented in a sequential manner. And we've also clarified the remediation process for cadets who fail one or more tests. We've also, again, emphasized and clarified the language as to what study notes a cadet is eligible to take with them into a testing process. We allow cadets in our test to use the Utah Code book, and we encourage them to use the Utah Code and look up questions related to the code, but we want to make sure that they're not including other material in that code book. This is not a change in policy, but rather a language change to clarify what's required there. And then in policy 2220, this deals with cadet meals, the amount that's paid here at the Academy for cadet meals. It's been a number of years since that was adjusted, so the policy change there is really just an adjustment of the amounts that are available to cadets to use. 2340, policy acknowledgement. This again is not a new policy, but something that we felt needed stronger language and clarity. Every cadet that goes through this academy at Post or any of the satellite academies is required to read the cadet rules and regulations and to sign a form acknowledging that they have received that information and understand that they will be subject to that, the requirements of that information as they move forward through the academy. Policy 2370 clarified the procedures for dismissing a cadet from peace officer training and clarified the due process rights. There were a few minor changes that needed to be made there in order to ensure that those rules were in line with the Utah Rules of Administrative Procedure. Most significant is the time for appeal that a cadet has once they're dismissed from the academy went from 5 days up to 30 days to be consistent with those rules. And then the appeal process first goes to the director, and then if the cadet wishes further appeal or judicial review, that then moves to the district court. We also had a policy change to policy 2500, which deals with dispatcher certification procedures. This is simply something that was inadvertently omitted from the dispatch policy when it was originally established. The certification testing criteria for the dispatch certification is the same as for LEO, but was not clearly stated in the dispatch policy, so that has been added for that clarification. Policy 8080 deals with classification and handling of case files. We went through a security audit earlier in the year to look at how we secure the files of our in-process investigations, and so we've made some additional stronger language to that policy to make sure that those files are secure. And then finally, Policy 9010 is actually the rules and regulations for cadets as they process through the academy. We've again made some stronger language there, reiterating that every cadet is required to sign and acknowledge that they have received and been able to review the rules and regulations, and again emphasizing what is allowed as far as study notes and guides in the testing process. I think that kind of gives you a synopsis of what's been done. Do you have any individual questions? I should also state that the entire curriculum is available to council members through our website, or if you would like to make a request, we can certainly send that out to you in electronic format if you want to have a full copy of the policy or procedure.
Thank you, Deputy Director Sparks. Okay, Lieutenant Brewer, Satellite Academy audits for Bridgerland Applied Technology Center and Weber State University.
Thank you, Chairman. We have been going for 2 hours. Is everybody okay now that we've thoroughly worn you out with what's taken place up to this point? Do we need to have a break, or is everybody good?
I think we're good to go.
All right, if we're ready to go, let's drive on then. So the first audit that was conducted this quarter was Weber State. The director there is Jack Rickards, and no exceptions were noted during this audit. I will say that during these audits for this year, since we have changed the testing system, considerable discussion has been conducted during these audits, and that's really one of the reasons why we conduct these audits, not only to ensure that Academy curriculum is being properly taught, but also what is it that we can help you out with, and what can we learn from this process, and so forth. And so I'll just make note that we do talk a lot about the testing process during these Academy audits, especially with Weber's, and as well as Bridgerland. So we went up to Bridgerland Applied Technology Center located in Logan, Utah, Cache County, and met with Director Rod Peterson there. Also note that no exceptions to the audit were observed during the official audit. I would like to point out that Director Peterson has made available his new facility. He's at the West Campus where the training is conducted there, and he has a newly remodeled area where he is offered to law enforcement in the northern end of the state. He can host about 100 officers for in-service training. Would like to have us pass it on, and I have coordinated that with our in-service training representative as well. So he's gracious enough to make sure that offer was placed out on the table. Any questions regarding the satellite audits?
Okay, Lieutenant, do you want to just go into basic training curriculum update?
Sure, please. So the first document I'd like to refer you to is titled Public Safety Dispatcher Training Curriculum. We've made some adjustments to this one-week course, and I would like to just point out a few things. There's been some adjustments to the times, and just refer you to that, to the left-hand side of this document. And so you'll go down there, and I don't need to point out all of them, but you'll see that as we've been doing this new curriculum for about 2 years now, we've found that there's needed to be some adjustments to the actual time allotted to each of these different units as they've gone through there. So an hour here, maybe a half hour back from that. And also, we'll like to point out that the excited, delirium, agitated, chaotic event has been added into the dispatcher curriculum. This is very beneficial as dispatchers are the ones who are receiving these calls. And so on the front end, if we can identify that a lot quicker in the process, that'll help these individuals who are experiencing this excited delirium the best chance of survival and the best chance of a positive outcome. So by including them in this process and training, it's really enhanced public safety as a whole, in our opinion. Any questions regarding the public safety, or excuse me, the dispatcher basic training curriculum? Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the special function officer curriculum. Outline some changes here. First off, I would like to just go over an overview of the hours. As you heard Captain Sparks state, with the change of our testing procedure, we were able to look at really closely the hours that we normally put towards these quizzes that we used to take, which we were able to free up some hours. So on page 2 of the special functions officer curriculum, would like to point out that there are some changes in hours that we have shifted around. So when we go back through the actual curriculum, you can see where those hours are coming from. So with that, I would like to just go back to the very first bulleted item, which just talked about the hours and where they came from. And then the second bulleted item, we moved the defensive tactics, the formerly known defensive tactics 1090, which was the recognition and response to excited delirium, and recommend that we place that into the core block of training because we feel like that really fits into that block of training. So that'd be the second bulleted item. Third bulleted item would be to move 1 hour from the law 1060, which is the crimes against person one, and add 2 hours to the law 1070, the crimes against persons two. And this is in a direct response to the attorneys who teach these courses for us. They've come to us and said, we don't need as much time in this block of training, but we sure could use another hour or two in this second block of training, so we're able to change those hours there. So if you notice on the actual special function officer hour overview, we've added the hour, taken away the 1 hour to the law 1060, added the hour to the law 1070, and the overall law hours have actually been increased by one. With this readjustment of hours training, we found that we were able to add 4 hours to the defensive tactics block of training. For as long as I've been here at Post, now we're coming up on 7 years, I've always had the defensive tactics instructors come to me and said, can you ever get us any more time? And that's really what we do, is we try to balance this curriculum to make sure that we are allowing more time. And so I've kind of always kept that in the back of my mind, and now we have an opportunity to allow them to get 4 more hours. So they've distributed that up in the areas that they feel like they could bolster the defensive tactics program, which is obviously a high liability area for law enforcement. And we felt like 4 hours there would be good, as well as increasing the number of hours that we put towards preparing the cadets for physical fitness and physical training and preparing them to pass the physical fitness test at the end of the 5 weeks of training. So you'll notice all of those are adjusted hours, which brings us actually to a total hours of 196. We were at 202 before. We're able to lean this down just a little bit, so to speak, and back off of 6 hours of training, which can still be done well within 5 weeks of training here at the Academy. Last bulleted item was we removed 4 hours from Patrol 1030, which was written scenarios. That was previously 8 hours of training, and we found over time, since we've been doing this the last couple of years, that we are not utilizing the full 8 hours. Once again, we can then go ahead and reallocate those hours to where we can use them more efficiently. Before I move on to the law enforcement block, any questions, concerns regarding the special functions block of training? Chief, please.
Nothing on that, but I do have a question on the dispatch
curriculum. Yes.
With that certification, do the dispatchers fall under the same guidelines if they're involved in a situation? Are the reporting standards the same for dispatch as they are?
Correct. If you're a post-certified dispatcher, meaning that it's not mandated by law if you want to work at a post-dispatch center that you become post-certified, but if you are a post-certified dispatcher and you are referred to post for criminal misconduct or a post violation, then yes, you go through the same process as officers do. Okay, let's go ahead and move on then to the law enforcement officer block of training, the 10 weeks. And our first recommendation is we would like to add a course that is titled Career Management, which is right now labeled as Experimental EXP 2010. And I've included in your packet, it's a yellow format of paper that gives the objectives that have been created for this course. Basically, we feel like it's important to start off officers at the beginning of their career to kind of get an understanding of what is it that you want to do in your career, and if so, how is it that you make this happen? And just refer you to those objectives to kind of browse through. Right now, we feel like we can cover that in 2 hours. So we've allotted 2 hours to that, and obviously, just like any of our courses, as we go through teaching this, if we feel like we can do it faster, then we'll reduce the number of hours, and if we feel like we need more, then we'll reevaluate that. So we are going to go ahead and begin teaching this as an experimental course, and then just put that out to the council. If you feel like this is important enough, we would go ahead and make that as part of the curriculum that would go out to all law enforcement academies throughout the state. So that's the first recommendation. Second recommendation is, since once again the changes of the testing allowed for us to free up hours, I made a comparison to how much time we were spending on physical training throughout the academy versus what we were doing in the special functions block, and we were only 4 or 5 hours more total for 10 weeks of training than we are allowing cadets to be able to receive physical fitness training in the first 5 weeks of training. So to make that adjustment, we went ahead and added 10 hours of training over the 10 weeks so we can give that additional training, which we actually kind of already were doing because we had the time available in the law enforcement block. But now it just accurately reflects more so in the curriculum. So then when we go to the satellite academies, they can see this is how we're administering it. So you'll notice that there is 10 more hours added to the physical fitness training for the overall. Moving on, this firearm stress qualification proposal. This came to the post staff and the post firearms group as kind of a concern and also a proposal to say, how is it that we get over this issue that we're noticing as we are giving the cadets this qualification during the firearms block of training? And just to kind of outline this just a little bit, cadets are required right now to go through a day qualification, a night qualification, and a stress qualification. And those are usually administered about 2 to 3 days into the actual firearms block of training. Well, what happens a lot of the time is they'll pass the day and the night, and then we'll get them to the stress qualification, which is a combination of the day qualification with some speeded up times, and then they have multiple targets that they're supposed to engage and go through. So hence the term the stress qualification. Well, what's happening is we're finding out that all the fundamentals that we're working on with these cadets, when we put them into the stress qualification, they're starting to go out the window. And now all of a sudden they fail that for the first time, they immediately go into remediation, and that point in time the cadet then is now kind of singled out, which is not so much of a bad thing, except that we have to then bring back around all of the fundamentals that we have been working with them up to this point in time before the stress qualification happens, and then revert them back to, okay, focus on everything we've taught you that you just basically threw out the window because now we put you under the stress qualification. So, long story short, the recommendation is that we take that stress qualification and make it not a qualification to pass the firearms block of training, but we move it into a training portion of it to be administered towards the end of the actual firearms block of training, meaning that if a cadet ends up failing that, it doesn't keep them from graduating. It's a measurement device, because these firearms instructors are saying that we feel like we can make a better product by not forcing this cadet to go ahead and just learn how to qualify and pass a stress qualification. They don't feel like there's value in that during this portion of the training. So we've been actually broaching this topic for about the last 6 months about how is this best to present this to the council, because sometimes it's not popular to say that we are actually taking out a qualification that once was required for peace officers historically up to this point. But then again, are we going to be getting a better product by taking this out? And that is really the reason for the proposal. So I would just submit this to the council for any questions regarding that.
I think that's certainly something that we could, as individual agencies, incorporate into our in-service training program and our firearms program to make up for the certification from post in this, especially if your firearms instructors are making this recommendation.
We've also batted around the idea of let's administer that at some point in time, maybe halfway through, to have them get a baseline test of it. It's not going to keep them from graduating or receiving certification, and then do it one more time right before they're done with the firearms program and use it as a measurement device to see how far they've actually come. And then that gives them an opportunity to kind of give that feedback of, look at how much better I am to be able to respond to and react to and get that draw stroke down to the 1 second or close to what it is, which the stress course measures as they go through this training. Robbie, did you have something?
Over the years, we've modified the course a little bit because of range requirements and those kind of things. So to a certain extent, we're not shooting the same course that we originally did.
Sure.
And I don't feel like that's especially a bad thing, but I think we could use the time better. Time we end up spending trying to help the few that can't make the speeds, we can use the time better doing other things and use it as a training block rather than a requirement block. As I look around at the qualifications that I see departments doing, there's nothing I see that adds to.
Sure, and we did the same thing. We solicited agencies across the state to find out if there's anything even close to this being used out there as a requirement, so to speak, for a qualification. And actually did just find out that West Jordan Police Department did bring this in as part of their qualification for their ongoing training, and that's the first agency we've been able to find. Maybe just to quantify this just a little bit, too, we researched the last 10 classes, which equals 228 cadets that were trained. 35% of the cadets either failed or passed the qualification at a 215 or below, which means that they are the group that immediately goes into this remediation process. Now they can't continue on with the rest of the class to receive the training that we feel like continues to enforce to teach them how to handle and be proficient with their handguns. And so that's concerning to us. 35% of those of the last 10 classes that we had.
Any other questions for Lieutenant Brewer? Two things. I received a request from Chief Tittensor at Brigham City Police Department to perhaps expand the number of hours that we are providing to the officers in, similar to a course that Dr. Gil Martin has taught throughout the state of Utah on handling stress in the job, how to balance workplace and home issues, so on and so forth. And Director Stevenson and I talked about this prior to the meeting, and the directors pointed out where there are blocks in the basic curriculum that does cover the majority of the material presented by Dr. Gil Martin. But another area I'd like to perhaps see if we can address more, and that's the issue of alcohol abuse, because we are constantly dealing with this in certification issues. And if there's a way that we can reinforce that measure, especially now that we have four hours of free time, it's not going to add any cost to any of us as agencies. The cadets are still going to be here, and I'd hate to see us lose 4 hours of time that we could perhaps come up with a curriculum dealing with alcohol and how we can reduce these numbers that we're seeing as they come through the post council. I thought I'd just throw both of those issues out for discussion here today. I'd like to carry it farther than just the basic academy, but come up with some type of in-service training standardized throughout the state, because a lot of these officers that we're losing, especially in the alcohol area, are tenured officers. So I think we need to make a concerted effort in the basic academy and then in-service training that we could all use to help salvage these officers and intercede before they get themselves in a bind.
Chair, may I make a recommendation that those 4 hours would be reallocated back to the special function officer block, which means that we would encompass all correctional officers receiving that training,
right,
and all officers across the state.
That's where it needs to go. It needs to be right at the beginning so we capture everybody.
Okay.
So I concur. So we need to vote on all three of these curriculums to adopt them, and then we can I don't think we need to vote on direction to post to develop curriculum covering these areas to fill up those 4 hours, unless you think we need it.
We'll have a class to present in September.
All right. Any other discussion on that? Everybody comfortable with proceeding? All right. Before we vote, we also have curriculum. Well, Lieutenant Brewer, did you have anything else? I'm sorry.
Nothing further.
All right, sir. We also have the correction training curriculum with Director Miller Fox. So before we take a vote on adopting these curriculums, we might as well review all of them and then do it at the end of Director Miller Fox's presentation.
Thank you, Council, for the opportunity to appear today. It is my greatest privilege and honor to serve both the Council, our state, and Department of Corrections in this current capacity. In your packet, you will see a tree. I have a very large packet of materials for you. But our focus is really on the second page. That's where I'll draw our attention. Corrections goes through ongoing curriculum evaluation. I just want to highlight a couple of features that we use to determine curriculum every year. We review employee disciplinary matters, grievances, critical incidents, current case law, input from instructors, input from students, input from agency leadership teams, input from field training officers. And then we also have a yearly evaluation with colleges, counties, and state correctional officers in order to develop and modify our curriculum. This year, we have no change that we're recommending in terms of overall total hours. We're looking at 188 hours. That's what we were last year, and we'd like to maintain those same hours. The distribution of those, however, has changed slightly. So if you draw your attention again to that second page of the memo, you'll see a heading that says Additions, Changes, Explained. I'd like to just run through those briefly with you. The first one is really not a change in hours, just a clarification in our objectives, BCO written test. These set of objectives just more clearly outline how the tests are administered in the BCO block. It also brings us into compliance with the post policies that Deputy Director Sparks addressed earlier. And it also identifies some of the requirements in the testing process. roles, notes to students about things we feel should be highlighted. Objectives 20.06.00 is our institutional tour. We implemented that last year, and this really is a familiarization course that we wanted to do at the very beginning of the block so that people knew, for example, what a Sally Port actually looked like, some of those features, some of the different housing structures. The recommendation has been that we could reduce this from 4 hours to 2 hours. We would recommend that we do that. It's just a slight change in how long we believe it takes to actually accomplish our objectives. 22.0400 is correctional terminology and operational guidelines. We originally tried this as a two-hour course. We believe we can reduce it to 1 hour. We've also thoroughly enhanced those objectives. They were previously a list of words, and we've provided a very detailed list of definitions now. 22.0200 is conversations with leadership. This came about again last year as a response to sheriffs as well as Department of Corrections staff. The wish was really to provide our officers with a little bit better perspective of what they're walking into from an agency leadership perspective. So this would increase from 1 hour to 2 hours, and we would include Department of Corrections Administration as well as bring in some county sheriffs during the second piece so that we make sure to address all the needs of our cadets. 23.0500 is critical incident training. This is one that continuously comes up for corrections, and I probably will be addressing this again in the future. We have been offering 4 hours. It is really an introductory course. What we'd like to do is increase that to 8 so that we can have an afternoon that has some tours to some of our mental health facilities along with some scenarios. That's been the request of our sheriffs. And the more we talk about this course, I think we'll be here again. This seems to be one that all of us in corrections really believe we have to spend more attention and time in. 20.0500 is instructor concept hours, and these come at us really as a result of some of the changes with regard to test reviews and some of those pieces. So when we looked at our overall hours, we had the opportunity to now go from 5 to 6. It keeps the total hours the same, and we'll use these hours now for things such as test retakes, remedial training, guest speakers, defensive tactics practice, or any special programs. For example, this year our officers ran in the law enforcement torch run for Special Olympics, so that provides us a little bit of latitude in our schedule to participate in events like that when they come around. 21.0300 is our reasonable force class. The hours will remain the same, but we have substantially enhanced those objectives, so I wanted to provide those. They are in your packet. 27.01.00 is correctional defensive tactics. We actually started working on this last year. You may or may not recall. We modified our edged weapons training program, and we now certify our own training program. We have our own instructor development program for that. So this is sort of the second step toward moving toward an independent program. What this allows us to do is to certify instructor trainers throughout the state. This has been reviewed by Utah Attorney General's Office and Office of Utah State Risk Management, and it is our initial push away from some of the more formalized and, I guess, trademarked labels of defensive tactics. 20.0302. is again the correctional defensive tactics objectives. What you're looking at here is their practical test. So the points is 101. The minimum score would be 81. I thought, why not 180? But I'll leave that to my defensive tactics folks to tell me what it should be. 27.0300 is ground tactics objectives, and this was just a simple update in objectives. So just to quickly summarize what we've got here is an overall no change in hours, mostly updates and minor modifications from classes we were piloting last year, and then some updates to objectives. Can I answer any questions about those?
Looks like you're off the hook, Director.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I just want to throw this out because it just seems we're responding to more and more mental health issues. And we talked about this once several meetings ago, as I recall, but that's always faulty. And that's the critical incident training that some departments have implemented throughout the state. I'm still a believer that we ought to be certifying new officers coming out of the academy in critical incident, how to deal with the mental health. At least in my department, we are dealing with mental health calls on a daily basis. It's just staggering, and it's continuing to grow. And there's been several incidences of attempted suicide by cops, and officers are being faced with how to respond to these more and more frequently. And I don't see it going away. I think it's a national trend that's increased throughout the country. And I know the certification course is 40 hours, and that's another week that we don't have the benefit of an employee back to us. But from my own personal perspective, that's a small price to pay to have a recruit officer come out and have those skills as they go into the FTO program. Because I'm not going to provide it in the FTO program. It's just that wouldn't be the appropriate place to do. And I have not talked with Director Stevens, so he's probably sitting, he's been kicking me under the table. I think he wants me to shut up. But I'd like to at least get some discussion started on perhaps considering expanding the academy another week and offering that critical incident training certification as part of basic training. We all do the recertification, which we have to within our departments. I think it's important. I know it's a hardship on all of us. When I hire somebody that has to go to the academy, and I still hire individuals that have no prior experience and send them to the academy. I don't hire just certified or certifiable officers because I think we miss some excellent candidates by doing so. But to me, it would be worth it to have that recruit come back out with that training. So I just thought I'd throw it out for some discussion. And part, yes, Director.
One of the things I would just like to offer the council is, at least in corrections curriculum, we do have, and SFO as well, we do have classes that deal with mental health issues. So if we were to consider something like the entire CIT certification, I think we currently have some objectives, I would just guess off of the cuff, 2 to 3 days perhaps, that we might be able to roll some of our current hours into a program such as that. So certainly we would expand, but right. There are some courses along those lines now.
Right, and I'm sure there are in the other curriculum, so we could do the same. So the net impact might not be a total of 40 hours, but yes. Something I think we ought to look at. Director Cook?
First of all, I wasn't planning on speaking too much at this meeting, and I wanted to learn. But since you're bringing that particular piece up, I'll add just from my past experience with Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, we joined with the Department of Corrections a few years ago in producing a corrections version. Just to give you some sort of idea of the impact that had on our organization, up in our mental health unit, we were averaging about 65 use of forces per year. And within the first year that we implemented that and began the training process for all the staff that work up there, we went from 65 to 3. And the other thing is that not only does that class impact how you deal with the mentally ill, it also impacts their ability to communicate and engage other people in a more positive way. And the third thing is that the people on the ground love it. It's one of those courses that if you talk to your staff, they'll tell you they gain a lot from it. And so I would just add those three things that I think it's very worthwhile, and it covers far more than just the mental health piece.
Right. Thank you. I've noticed since we've implemented, I mandate my whole department to go through it. We've noticed a reduction in use of force as well.
I was just going to add, I completely agree with Mr. Cook, and you know, my challenge is catching up. So I've got that role of catching up with a department that doesn't have everyone trained. We've got fresh recruits that are coming out with that certification already in place, it certainly helps me and my department not have that responsibility with 40 hours or somebody who just hired through a 40-hour course. The other thing I would add, and maybe we talk about at some point, is what are we looking at for ongoing certification? Is it going to be substantial, or what's in place now versus what are we looking at? future. Because it can't be a one-time deal.
Right, no. I don't recall what the number of hours are for the recertification, but it is actually part of the CIT program. I just don't know those numbers, Chief.
I believe it's 4 hours.
4 hours?
And you can, okay. you can do it as part of, you can go and be part of the training. You can be involved in the scenarios. It's actually pretty easy to get back.
But you can recert by teaching.
By teaching, too? All right.
How often?
Director Walton?
I'm curious, do you get, is your insurer giving you an adjusted rate on the basis of having all your staff CIT trained? Because I wonder.
No.
No?
No, it should be.
There's an argument made that, I mean, one of the, you hate to look at these things in terms of cost, but as you start looking at cost benefit, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, suppose I just was in the office of the Pike County Sheriff the other day chatting with him. Suppose I'm Sheriff Lee and I've got three deputies and you tell me I'm in this training and I can't afford it. Or you say I got to put something in the academy for a week and that's another week I have to pay them. There's a cost there that you have to recognize, and then you also have to recognize what impact does this have across the state. Because it's not just your department or something. It's the mental health issue, not just in the core urban areas. That to my experience working with a couple of my big consulting clients, Scottsdale PD and Phoenix PD, and taking a look at how they've reduced not just correctional use of force, but street use of force and shootings. And you know, people make a lot of money off of police shooting.
Right.
And you know, aside from the moral value of saving. So I wonder, Chief Keith, if we might not want to ask our risk associations if they'd be willing to help in some way to incentivize that training in the academy. I for one think that it's something we ought to try and figure out a way to fit into our academy. You know, we've gone over the years to, well, we've got to cut a week out here, we've got to cut a week out here too. We need to add this in. I think it merits some.
Well, and that's certainly something we can talk with our insurance companies. I think it's worthwhile. Sure, Tracy?
Well, just from the logic of it, I mean, who's your most at-risk person to make a mistake in? That is your new recruits as they first come out on the street. Right. To have that from day one when they first come out, having accomplished it in academy, makes a lot of sense, even if it is an additional week that has to be done. Those hours, I don't think, would ever offset the benefit versus the cost of that to have a day one recruit with that kind of training.
I agree, and before we give directions to POSO, I think it would be incumbent upon the two associations to go back to our memberships, the chiefs and the sheriffs, and discuss it with the chiefs and the sheriffs so that Director Stevenson doesn't get irate phone calls from chiefs and sheriffs that want to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at least we'll give them a little cover.
Yeah.
If I may offer, we'll go back to our curriculum and look at the hours, if any, that cover this area and subtract those from those classes and then provide just a plan to implement the 40 hours. We'll trigger until we meet with you in September, but at least we would have a plan that you guys can see, put your hands on, and prepare your respective associations for that increase. So there may be, you know, 10 hours that we can find in the academy. Therefore, it's only 30 hour, additional hours to the overall training hours.
Right. I look and see things like we spend 4 hours on graduation preparation. It's obviously a little more orchestrated now than when I went through the academy.
They agree with that.
Yeah, they did. So, but I'm sure there's we can reduce that 40 hours by consolidating classes, but I think it's time for us to move forward with this. So if the rest of the council's great, let's have post address the two issues on some type of an alcohol class and a lifestyle class, for lack of a better word, as well as CIT training, and be prepared to report back to us on our September meeting. I think the main thing we're trying to do is better prepare our officers and keep them out of jam and successful in their careers. And I think that we're just facing so much of these issues now, it's just time to do so. Chief Carpenter.
Chief, did you foresee this alcohol class also looking at impact on family, divorce, all that, the other aspects of that?
Yes.
Okay.
And just the impact it has on your career, thus your family. You know, how many times have we heard today, well, I didn't know, you know, what the impact would be. Well, you know. Okay, well, any other discussion on that? Then we need to go back and vote to approve the curriculums that have been presented to us today. The first was a communications officers, a dispatcher curriculum, so do I have a motion on that?
Make a motion to accept it.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. The next is the SFO block.
I'll make a motion.
Sheriff Tracy?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Next is LEO. Motion?
Move to accept.
Okay.
Second.
Got it. All in favor?
Aye.
And the final is corrections. Motion?
I'll move to accept.
All right. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Great. We're burning right through this agenda. Okay. Finally, post guidelines. Director Stevenson.
Just to clarify, with the approval of the legal curriculum, that also includes the stress course proposal.
Get it? Yes.
Thank you. I stand for you to make a recommendation to these guidelines. As it stands, we have a Category D, which encompasses almost all Class B misdemeanors. That is a very broad category. That includes wildlife violations. That includes inappropriate access to BCI records or USCIS records one time. We, as a staff, do not feel like those violations warrant a Category D sanction. So we are proposing to establish a different category, an additional category, leave Category D. That will include Class B misdemeanors, which involve sexual acts, harassment, theft, crimes of dishonesty, use of alcohol, or misuse of prescription drugs. And then create a Category E, which would provide a baseline of 6 months, and the range would be a letter of caution to a year and a half years of suspension. This category would include Class B misdemeanors, but involve violence, sex acts, harassment, theft, crimes of dishonesty, use of alcohol, or misuse of prescription drugs. And then move Category F to include the Class C misdemeanors and infractions. And then Category G would be the indefinite suspension. I think it would be fair and equitable for those that commit violations that don't quite meet the criteria of a Category D. But I'm willing to entertain any questions. I might add it also gives you a lot more freedom. Even though guidelines are not a legal binding document, still would establish some consistency as far as my recommendations before this body.
I think this expansion, as you stated, provides us with leeway to handle some of the incidences that have come up that we've struggled with in the last couple of meetings by allowing us to tone down the suspension for incidences that probably didn't warrant the level of discipline that we were bound to do so. And at times, over the years, the council has wavered from the guidelines, as you're well aware, and reduced below the recommendation or the guidelines, the sanctions that have been imposed.
Correct.
This would create the categories that we could use easily to accomplish the same goal.
I believe so.
Mr. Chair, I'd make a
motion just to move us along. We accept the guidelines. I recognize that they are guidelines. I hope we're a little better than Johnny Depp in seeing that they're better, stronger than the pirate code, even though there's no guidelines.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Next meeting, Director.
Thank you. Yes. With your approval, Council, I would like to... Usually we do the September meeting here at Post, but I would propose that we do it during the last week in conjunction with the Sheriff's Conference. Yes, sir. That would be...
Conference is the week of the 22nd, I believe.
Is it the week of the 22nd?
Yes.
So really, Sheriff, if you guys could weigh in, what would be an appropriate day to do that?
That's a good question.
Because the Sheriff's, the round table will be on the 25th, right, on Wednesday?
Yeah. Yes.
No, we could go after a round table. That may cause a little problem with us because we usually just piggyback our association meeting on the back of the round table. But
what time do you guys start Monday? Is there a golf tournament? How does...
Yes,
Saturday.
Saturday.
That's on Sunday.
That's Sunday night, usually. Yeah.
Not that I play.
I don't know that if it was a 1 o'clock start that it would be significant on the 25th.
Yeah.
You guys would probably appreciate it because you'd have to end your association meeting by 1 o'clock.
Yeah, bingo.
Well, now you're just talking crazy.
Yeah. Just because you're getting out of presence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Somebody else will be stuck in there. That'd be you. I think a 1 o'clock would be fine on the 25th, if that works for everybody.
He will be the president. I agree.
Very good. So September 25th at 1300, and we'll send out an email notifying you of the location.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome. Anybody have any other business like to bring before the council? Okay, how about a motion to adjourn?
A motion to adjourn.
We're adjourned. Lunch is served. Thank you, everybody.